Lightly on the Ground Radio on WRIR LP 97.3 FM and worldwide at WRIR.org. We're exploring our food system, which the Food and Nutrition Information Center of the USDA's National Agricultural Library describes as everything from farm to table. It extends from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. I'm Sunny Gardner, and today's show is a mixtape of audio about the question of genetic engineering and its effect on our food supply. Among the voices you will hear are Cricket Rakita, an organic certifier, Ira Wallace, a leader in seed saving, Matt Lohr, the Commissioner of Agriculture, and Donnie Caffrey, a store owner and national natural products activist. Let's just listen to what they have to say. There will be music interspersed and my voice interspersed with questions and comments. I hope you enjoy it. It should be informative, especially in light of the fact that our farm bill is in the works and there is a huge movement, lobbying effort, and lots of money behind the idea of allowing more genetically modified organisms into our food system. There's a sense that as more and more large industry, more large farms get into the national program, the National Organic Program, that it's becoming somewhat diluted, or it's in danger of becoming diluted just by the kind of regulations that a larger organization needs versus a smaller.
It's a real danger. There's no question about it. It was probably a year after the National Organic Standards Act was passed that big agriculture was already not asking in a polite way, but they were trying to add an amendment tacked onto some Bill 215 at the bottom of the 98th page to change the National Organic Standards Act so that it would accommodate big agricultural farmers. And the example was that organic feed was expensive in those years, and they were saying farmers can't feed these chickens organic grains. The price is too expensive. So the little amendment was going to make it so that if the price of organic feed became more than two or three times that of commercial feed, the farmer could feed their chicken conventional feed, not organic feed, and still call the chicken organic when they took it to market. And so the watchdogs that watch all the attachments that can fly through and get attached to the organic world, you have to watch it like a hawk, absolutely like a hawk.
So
big agriculture is always trying to do stuff that endangers the true organicness of the product that mm-hmm. we want to consume.
Mm-hmm. And one of the issues in that bigger question is the genetically engineered crops. I know that people are becoming more aware of the presence of genetically engineered plants and their presence in the food that they might buy unaware. And there's a pretty high level of consciousness of the danger posed to the seed supply. And so farmers in the sustainable agriculture community speak often of genetic modification and genetic engineering and that sort of thing, and with passion, and they speak out against it. What is the feeling among those at the table end of the farm-to-table spectrum about GM and that sort of thing?
Yeah, this GMO issue is really just coming to fruition in its awareness now. The most recent, several months ago in California, the Prop 37 issue to label foods that have genetically modified ingredients in them, to label them as such, was a very hot topic. And now the awareness has, and now there's probably 15 states in the country now which are starting to put forth their own bills before their own legislatures, to craft, or, they're in the process. Washington State is the next, and since California did end up failing in their attempt, Washington State has another bill, which is not a prop like California has. It's a real bill going through the House where it gets discussed and changed and modified as it goes forth. But it seems like a very good bill, and we're in support of that bill. We're hoping that bill goes through. But this whole issue is becoming so aware that it has to reach the federal level again, where it needs to be answered on that stage. and hopefully in a manner which will hold integrity and not dilute the importance of this cause, because we're not necessarily calling for things not to be genetically modified. We just want to know what we're eating when we eat it.
In that movie Food, Inc.,
mm-hmm.
someone from the pro-GM party was saying that if we label it, then people may steer clear of it, which made me scratch my head.
So?
That okay. Yeah, I do believe that we should be allowed to know those things.
We're really blessed in Richmond to have Whole Foods, Elwa Thompson's, and Good Foods Grocery. I think we just do a great job for what you find in other cities around the country. We have a great selection here, right here in Richmond.
Mm-hmm. We do indeed. Well, let me ask you, just kind of bringing it back around, do those stores allow GMOs on their shelves?
Oh, we all have GMOs on our shelf. We can't control.
Because there's no labeling.
There's no labeling. We can't control that. Mm-hmm. We do our best to find out, you know, especially some of the vegetarian products that are out there that use a lot of soy and corn.
Mm-hmm.
Or your customers dig and tell us even, this product has that, and so we'll discontinue it and pick up something else. So mm-hmm. we have done our best to move along to GMO-free products as much as possible. When I did the bulk selection for our store, and I wanted to have a nice wide selection of all different kinds of different corn meals and corn flours and stuff, and I had to nix it all because the corn is so heavily GMO, and soybeans too. We mm-hmm. just went straight with the organic and didn't deal with any of the regular conventional ones on those two items, soybeans and corn. So we just have two bins of cornmeal and corn grits, mm-hmm. not a big selection like we do on all the other products.
Right, yeah. It's a pretty amazing selection of bulk products, yeah. Are you mm-hmm. aware of any actual problems with consuming genetically engineered foods?
Well, there's a great question, because it's definitely not like we're eating GMO foods and we all have the flu, or we're all vomiting. Genetically modified means taking the genes from something that's not of that species mm-hmm. and putting it into a plant. Mm-hmm. And so science has reached the point where they can so accurately insert these genes and play with the results that happen as a result of that, that they can take genes from anywhere now. Is not just from the same species. And what do you have today? You have this huge onslaught of kids with asthmas and the downturn in our immune systems these days, and obesity. There's just so many things going wrong that have never quite gone wrong quite like the way they are today. I know we're a little, you know, lazy. We sit around there playing with our little pads and stuff and don't get outside and exercise. But there's still a little more going on. And the genetically, and I guess if there is something that found something with the GMO issue, there was the pollen from the GMO corn. The pollen, the bees were just dying. And that's really what has ended up being the explanation for the huge bee die-off is the genetically modified crops, which are very heavy in corn and soybeans. Of course, they're 95% of our crops are from genetically modified seed. And then that starts to, you can't just keep that contained within the farmer's field. The wind drift carries it over into the organic farmer's field, and it becomes a part of their genetic makeup, too, to some degree. It becomes pretty messy.
Mm-hmm.
And the foreign countries all around the world have steered clear of just what America has done and just blindly accept that GMOs are absolutely great and fine. And they have approached it with much more reasonable approach and saying, hold on, you got to prove yourself here. And, you know, and it doesn't look like you've proven that it's really safe. You've just kind of blundered forward with this mm-hmm. issue. And, you know, the federal government and large agriculture, they get along pretty well.
Yes. They're scratching each other's backs a lot. Well, it seems that eliminating genetically modified seeds and systems from agriculture, especially in light of the fact that big agriculture and legislators get along so well, like that would be a really hard row to hoe. Is there something that could be done short of actually eliminating them?
Well, the idea with labeling the products is not to eliminate them, but just to label it as such and let the market take its course after things are labeled to whether they contain genetically modified ingredients or not.
I'm Ira Wallace with Southern Exposure Seed Exchange in Mineral, Virginia, a master gardener. I also am on the board of the Organic Seed Alliance, and Southern Exposure is one of the plaintiffs in the Monsanto lawsuit, Ascada et al. Southern Exposure, a worker-owned cooperative business that sells heirloom, open-pollinated, and organic seeds. We offer over 700 varieties. We are dedicated to maintaining the diversity and health of our food system. Our website is southernexposure.com. You can order seeds and get all kinds of free information about gardening, or you can go to southernexposure.com/blog if you want to keep up with what's going on in our political case with Monsanto. Okay, tell a real story of an incident of contamination of organic seed. Well, I thought I didn't really have one, but unfortunately we do. We have, we sell a number of heirloom corns. I don't really feel like, because I just found out this information, sharing the name of the farm, but we have one of our varieties that we also go cooperatively in with Fedco. We had three different growers in three different states growing this. Well, one of the lots turned up with 1 in 200,000 part of GMO contamination. That farm is a mile away from any other farm that admits to having GMO corn growing. And now that's 1,000 pounds that that farmer won't be able to sell. You know, we at Southern Exposure are going to probably take the hit for that because we thought a mile was far enough away to protect your corn. But guess what? The wind in the right conditions can carry that pollen a long way. And just a minute amount of contamination means it is no longer valuable as a organic crop. The lawsuit we're bringing against Monsanto would end this predatory practice if it's successful. Farmers under the current legal configuration are quite vulnerable. Our efforts go beyond that court, beyond the court case. We're working with legislators to protect farmers. We're reporting to the media, like you, and doing public education to not only work in the courtrooms, but work through the legal system and through the public will to protect farmers and make sure that it's not those who are contaminated who pay the price, but those who are doing the contaminating. Well, we're currently in appeal of an unfavorable initial judgment that would have thrown the case out. The three-judge panel in the appeals court asked some very hard questions of Monsanto and did not appear to be satisfied with the evasive answers that they have. We should hear a ruling in 2 to 4 months. Farmers and seed companies are meeting to discuss other strategies and options beyond the lawsuit and also to look at our public education campaign and how we can let people know what's happening. We appreciate your helping with that. Fortunately, in the case of the corn, there are two other growers in two other states, and hopefully bad things didn't happen there. We'll know when we get test results from those batches. And anyway, another thing about that is, even if nothing else, we have to spend $200 a batch to get confirmation that their Monsanto seeds haven't trespassed onto our farmers' fields. I hate that. So that's, you know, probably corn is the most vulnerable crop in this thing. Let's see. Tell us the effect it has on the grower and on your seed company. What the effect that this contamination has on growers is less and less growers are willing to grow corn. They feel afraid that they can't tell, you know, how far the wind will carry this pollen. Soybean growers have been contaminated just by soybeans falling off of a truck going to some big farmer. It's very difficult. And, you know, like I say, for the organic crop, a minute amount of contamination is enough to ruin hundreds and hundreds of pounds of seed. And, you know, we as companies, either the farmer bears the cost of this constant testing, or we as companies do. And for a small company, that can be a lot if you offer dozens of varieties of corn. You know, so we feel like if we let that burden fall on our small farmers, they're not going to even keep wanting to grow corn for us. So you wonder why, you know, some specialty or heirloom corns are so, seed is so expensive. Monsanto is one reason. If you don't want to have that in your food, we are all paying the price. We think that it should be their responsibility to, you know, keep their genes on the fields of the farmers who want them. But that's not the law. However, we have this lovely lawsuit. And the reason that we're involved in it is a preemptive thing so that our farmers are not no longer held responsible if Monsanto genes transgress into their farms. This would be a landmark assault on this predatory tactics of Monsanto of going in, being able to go into a farmer's field, take samples, and then most of the time it's not that they bring them to suit, they threaten them with suit and settle out of court. And even if they don't have the farmer pay anything, they make them not talk about what happened. And that makes us think not much is going on. But the number of farmers who, I can't talk about that. It's really un-American.
You are listening to Lightly on the Ground Radio on Richmond Independent Radio, and our guest today in the live room is Matthew Lohr. He is the Commissioner of Agriculture for the state of Virginia. What is your thought on the Monsanto is trying to introduce a new multi-GMO sweet corn? Hmm. Are you familiar with that?
I know there's efforts out there to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I think there's some positives to doing that because one thing that when you produce sweet corn, for example, most people don't like worms in their sweet corn. And so in order to make sure that you don't have worms, you have to spray it about every 5 days once the corn starts to tassel until you pick the corn to make sure that the bugs and the worms aren't there because they can do a lot of damage. The beauty about sweet corn is you have to shuck it to eat it. So there's really not a lot of difference in the quality from organic grown sweet corn to traditional or commercial grown sweet corn because, you know, you shuck the corn and your ear is protected. But I think anything that can be done that can reduce the amount of insecticides that are used on corn would certainly be a good thing.
Yeah. Well, what this product would be doing is putting the insecticide in the food rather than on it.
Well, but it would reduce the amount of spray that a farmer has to spray to kill those worms. So, again, it would be genetically inbred into the crop, so it would take care of the worms without having to spray the chemicals every 5 days throughout the season.
Yeah. One extension agent I talked with about this whole issue of edible fresh food, mm-hmm. as opposed to commodities when you're talking about GMOs, mentioned that one of his biggest fears with this particular type of product is that the super weeds are already evolving because weeds are developing an immunity to the herbicides mm-hmm. that are being bred into the corn, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any experience on that or knowledge about it?
Well, I don't have any direct experience, but that's certainly you know, one of the concerns that Monsanto, who makes Roundup, of course, and they have Roundup-ready crops, Roundup-ready soybeans for years, and most of your listeners probably know, but that allows the farmer to plant, and then it's genetically resistant to the Roundup so that you can come in and spray and all the weeds around it will die, but the crop is left to thrive on. But over time, you know, we've had Roundup now for probably 30 years or so. There are certain types of weeds that are beginning to become resistant. And so I know the large pharmaceutical companies are continually trying to modify their chemicals to break that resistance and come up with new products to try to prevent that from happening. But you're right. There are the Roundup isn't as effective on certain weeds as it was years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere underneath the floorboard, I will sweep my garden. Underneath the cupboard lives a mouse, and he discovered there was nothing there, nothing there, to discover. Falling from the sky, there are raindrops in my eyes, and my thoughts are digging in the backyard. My roots have grown, but I don't know where they are. I don't know where they are. I don't know where they are. My roots have grown, but I don't know where they are. Cats and dogs and rooster calls, telephones and payphone stalls, they take away the lonely days for now. They take away the lonely days for now.
You are listening to Lightly on the Ground Radio on Richmond Independent Radio, and this is a mixtape version, including voices of informed people speaking on the matter of genetic engineering.
Two most common genetic modifications currently are, one is herbicide resistance, and the other is BT implanting. BT is an interesting one. BT is a naturally occurring disease that affects the larval stage of insects. The companies involved in genetic modification have been able to isolate the gene that causes this naturally occurring disease and splice it into all sorts of crops. Corn, canola, which is another big one that's genetically modified, soybeans, cotton. I believe they're working on an eggplant right now. Mm-hmm. This gene is interesting to me because the bacteria itself have been cultured and used by organic farmers for really since before there was such a thing as organic versus conventional. It's been used for over 100 years, BT as a spray to kill the insects in their larval stage. The difference is that when if I were to buy a commercially available, made for organic production BT spray and sprayed my corn with it, it would have some effectiveness, and then in a few days, the active ingredients would be pretty much gone. When you engineer a crop to have BT implanted in it, they also implant usually a cauliflower mosaic virus variant attached to the gene, and some other, they call it promoters, basically. It's a little involved, but I mean, like, for example, in every cell of your body, there is the genes for your eye color. But if I were to take your fingernail and look at it, I wouldn't be able to tell what your eye color is. They take the BT gene and they want it. They don't want it to not express itself in any of the cells because they want, when an insect bites it, they want the insect to get sick. So they put in what they call a promoter that makes that gene always express itself, and they attach it to the gene, and then it goes into the plant. And so every cell, every kernel of corn, every cell in the root, every cell in the stem, every cell that has any of the syrup made into corn syrup later on, all of that is going to have that BT in it, and it's there. It's not going away after 3 days like it does when the organic farmer currently uses it. It's there. And there have been some limited studies, but because there is not proper testing for genetically modified organisms, in my opinion, not proper testing. It's basically industry volunteered testing is all that's required to get a GMO approved. It's impossible to do a study. If I were to do a study, even if I had all the money and all the resources I need to do a study, I would not be able to publish the results of that study because I don't have the rights to study their property without their permission. And there was recently a study from Europe that showed that GMO products had deleterious effects on rats, and they came under a lot of criticism because basically they didn't have the right to do the study. The very first time that that came up many years ago, there was a BT potato that was studied and showed caused a lot of problems in rats. This was in the late 90s, I think. They got control of that right away. It's very difficult to conduct an independent study of this. The only studies that are released are the industry-conducted studies of GMO food safety, to my knowledge. And so I'm very concerned about GMOs personally. In addition to the organic, it's just plain not allowed, the use of genetically modified organisms in organic production.
To get back to the legislature part, most organizations, probably the National Products Association, but I know that NSAC and the Alliance for Progressive Values, they have legislative working days where you can actually go and work with people who know how to advocate effectively and learn how to be effective advocates for your causes, rather than go out on your own and just start knocking on doors and wandering around the halls of Congress or the General Assembly. You can actually learn how to effectively advocate for your causes. And that's a good thing to do. So watch out for your legislative action days for organizations that you're following.
Good point, good point. All these organizations have their lobby days, so to speak.
Lobby days, yes.
Yes.
And they have preparatory days to
those. You go show up and support their lobby day and go on the Hill and...
Yeah, shake some trees. But learn how to shake them gently. To participate in the discussion, please email your thoughts to sunny@wrir.org. Lightly on the Ground Radio is a Sunny Gardner production for Richmond Independent Radio, broadcast on WRIR-LP FM 97.3 and WRIR.org. Befriend us on Facebook on the Lightly on the Ground radio page so you will know who will appear on the show and when podcasts become available. The theme music is Bonefire Dance by Rattlemouth. I hope this was useful to you. Walk lightly on the ground, and thank you for listening.